And now, your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lernis.
Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the Historic Core. This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and I'm here with your co-host, Mr. Phil Lernis, ladies and gentlemen.
It has been so hard being me, Dean Haglund. Not just today, as I've been desperately pulling late nights trying to get everything done so I can get out of town.
Right.
Right. I've been a little bit accident prone today. I put my forehead through a window.
Right.
Busted a hole in a window. It looks like one of those cartoons where you see the outline of the character.
Which is that really great song, Forehead Through the Window. Isn't that
I don't know that song.
Tiptoe.
Oh, my Lord. Just became Jay Leno. That was awful. Jay Leno will be making an appearance later on today's show.
I just been winded by my own lameness.
So that's what Shakespeare meant when he wrote Hoisted by Your Own Petard.
Is that
winded
what he meant?
By your lameness is really the... To bring it up to date.
Thank you.
You know, but it's been hard being me.
Yeah, no, it's hard being you.
I was, as you know, sick for like a week and a half.
You were out of it.
And on Friday, I was getting so angry because my throat was hurting so much. And I was going, what am I, sick again?
This can't
be. What's going on?
That's not right.
And it was actually running around, taking care of errands and doing all this stuff in 100-degree weather. It was actually my goddaughter, who was my co-pilot that day, who... kind of calmed me down by asking the obvious question, what are those big clouds of smoke? Oh, and we had the huge fire in the Sepulveda Pass.
Right,
I didn't know.
Getty.
Yeah, I didn't know Los Angeles was on fire. So that sore throat was not returning illness. It was me sucking in ash from a fire all
See?
Day.
So that's why you live in California. A little fire season, it comes every year.
It's always mesquite grilled.
And it's mesquite grilled, and it puts a lovely scent of smoky deliciousness in all your artwork.
That's nice. You just, the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and you just put a bow on the basket, and I appreciate that.
No, it's not. Look, we have fires every year. There's a dry brush. And it burns, and then naturally, remember the Griffith Park fire?
But there are fires all over, especially the Southwest and the Western United States.
Yes.
Washington State.
Washington State.
Horrible fires. And
right.
If I remember correctly, when we had the Griffith Park fire, we received a lot of help from Washington State. Firefighters came down
they
to really help.
They didn't come down. Yeah.
We're on our own this time because
those guys are busy fellas. But have you been to Griffith Park lately? Why, it's all bounced back. You would never know there was ever a burn there.
Right.
See?
Set, of course, the Griffith Park fire by the Glendale fire chief.
No.
Yes.
What?
Remember, it was blamed on a homeless guy.
Yeah.
But it turned out that it was a case of arson. It was set by the Glendale fire chief, yeah.
No, not Which that is, one.
I thought that was the Griffith Park one, yeah.
I thought he was already in jail by that time.
No, we'll have to look. I think it was that one.
Wow.
Because so many fires are set by the people who end up
putting them out.
Responding and putting them out.
Because they're bored.
So we received a lot of emails last night from our friend, the Venerable Pooh, LeJean Johnson, who's been catching up on his Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Good
and
for him.
I'm really not going to get a chance to address most of his comments or questions today, but we did want to mention that we got them and we appreciate them. He certainly appreciated, your rants about Disney.
Oh,
when
did
we
he?
Went there.
See?
Not necessarily with you on your pedantic presentation of supposed racism as part of Disney, but he really, I thought this was a very interesting word he used to describe Disney and the Disney Empire and the Disney vision.
Right.
Which was soulless.
Ah, very good.
The soullessness of
Excellent.
Disney. What and you call the bastion of cultural imperialism.
He calls it soullessness.
Yeah.
Have you read any Carl Hiaasen work, by the way? This guy
Not since Breakfast. It's not been in what
delicious.
We're reading, so no, you know that I have not been.
Okay, anyway, he supports me. Carl Hiaasen supports me in my vision of Disney.
You, Dean Haglund.
He does.
Well, I should flip through that index. There's no mention of Dean Haglund here. There's young Kirk Douglas. Okay, maybe that's what he meant. Young Glenn Close. Maybe that's what
Ouch.
He meant.
Ouch. That hurt.
We also won't get much of a chance. I've been meaning to talk to you about, you're going to be acting in two projects coming up. One of which I've been meaning to talk to you about, called Space Command. We don't really have time on today's show.
Not a lot of time.
So this is a real throwback science fiction thing from what
really
it
cool.
seems like. Really
yes.
cool. Real veteran and
talented.
And prestigious sci-fi writer is behind this project. So why don't we save that and we'll talk about it a bit on next week's show.
Let's do that.
Of course, the other show that you were going to be acting in, the other project, is something I'm going to be directing.
What?
In December, and I'm going to be writing it back on the East Coast, rewriting it.
Rewriting it.
Over the next 2 weeks when I'm in Washington, D.C.
Fantastic. This is a feature that you are rewriting after...
More than a decade.
More than a decade.
Yeah,
revisiting your...
Some people, not least of which is our friend Bert Bulos, really lit a fire under my ass to revisit this. Said the time is now. Let's
do it.
Let's do this.
And the fire is under your ass.
So
that's part of why Getty said Getty bushfire. That was it.
I'm to blame.
Your own butt gave you a sore throat.
What? What? Because I'm blowing smoke where the sun don't shine.
Your head's so far up there, you got it your own sore throat.
You know,
I don't know what that means.
I'm going to be attending a very special, we do live events almost every week on this show. I'm going to be attending a very, very special live event this coming Saturday in the Washington, D.C. area. Actually, I think in Centerville, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
The wedding of Chill Pack Hollywood Hour's very own, John Lawler.
The musician who does our opening theme music?
Who does our opening theme music. John Lawler, the front man for the B-Film Extras, who also did the theme song to The Truth Is Out There.
Look at that guy.
He's
a friend of all of us.
He's tying the knot.
Wow.
This weekend.
Who's the lucky lady?
The lovely Kelly is the lucky lady.
That's
So I'm looking forward to heading out there and spending some good time with
Send my best wishes. Sorry I'm not there. I'm a busy fellow. I don't know what the hell.
And they'll be sorry then, once they hear that they did not invite you.
Where are they registered? I'll make it up.
Now, I doubt that I'm going to be back east long enough to attend the taping of this year's Kennedy Center Honors.
No.
But I, because it's December 2nd.
Oh, yeah.
But I must admit, I am intrigued to be there. This year kind of is sort of cool.
I've watched one or two of them, but they're very stodgy affairs.
Right. But occasionally, they're interesting. And they are interesting in that there is usually an interesting cross-section of
entertainers
and cultural contributors,
right?
And anyway, this year you've got Dustin Hoffman, I guess, is the big name from the movie world.
Got him.
Led Zeppelin.
What?
Yes. Bluesman, one of my favorites. Bluesman Buddy Guy.
Buddy Guy.
You've got ballerina Natalie Makarova.
Uh-huh.
And who can forget the dance craze she started? Remember the Makarova? Hey, Makarova.
Oh,
I just became Jay Leno now.
What is it, the lamest joke day ever?
and David Letterman.
What?
David Letterman is getting a Kennedy Center Honors following the footsteps of his mentor, Johnny Carson.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons I really want to be there. I mean, I want to be there for Buddy Guy. I mean, I can only imagine what the musical performances are going to be that, you know, when you see it on television, it's always an edited version.
Right.
But there is always, you know, there's performances to and presenters that honor the honorees. And I can only imagine the musicians who would be assembled to honor Buddy Guy.
Yeah, that would be something.
But the discomfort factor on the part of David Letterman.
Yeah.
Because this seems to be exactly the sort of thing that he just dreads.
And never
doesn't go to award shows.
Yeah.
Doesn't,
and remember how uncomfortable he was with the Oscar hosting.
So to have people laud him and talk about him.
At length.
I mean, I remember one time he came out, the last time he appeared at the Emmys was after Johnny Carson's death.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out and was the one asked. I thought it was very interesting. NBC, Carson's network, asked
Letterman
to come back to tribute, pay tribute to Johnny Carson, not Jay Leno, who was carrying on the tradition of The Tonight Show.
Well, he didn't carry it on. I mean, there's no Tonight Show theme.
He pushed him out.
Yeah, basically.
Kicked him out of,
whatever.
But, and I remember Jon Stewart accepting an award for, you know, best variety show, best late night show, in which he competed against Letterman.
Right.
And when he accepted the award that night, he began his acceptance speech, Jon Stewart, by saying, I wonder if Dave knows that we all feel about him exactly the way he just spoke about Johnny.
Ah.
And so I wonder if Jon Stewart will be one of the people who come and speak. But it'll be very interesting.
It'll be very interesting.
So
I would see it for Led Zeppelin, mind you.
That's going to be really
interesting.
Yeah,
because you know John Bottoms was the drummer, and now his son is playing drums for the band and has basically picked up where his dad left off. And other than perhaps Robert Plant not hitting all the high notes he used to be able to in his youth, I think that band still might pull off some awesome licks, as the kids say.
Well, no, and do they perform
they
at the
perform.
End of it? Are the people who are honored, do they then take the stage and perform?
Well,
they have to sing for their supper? That doesn't seem fair.
It's not singing for their supper. I think they, if they choose to, they can.
Actually, the first part of the Kennedy Center Honors is, I'm not joking, I'll joke about something else, unfortunately, later on in the show, and it'll no doubt be a weak Leno monologue joke, but it begins, the fete. The tributes to these honorees always begin with a dinner with the Secretary of State. So they all do get a dinner with Hillary Clinton, which is...
That's...
I don't understand, but...
You know, she's been around. Maybe she's seen a lot of shows.
Hello?
Around the world, I mean.
What?
You know?
Let's move on.
Yeah.
We do give a lot of grief to Jay Leno on this show.
Yeah, why is that?
Because he's... terrible because he hasn't contributed since taking over the Tonight Show. He hasn't contributed 5 minutes of good television.
Remember how funny he was on Letterman when those
way back in the day.
Oh my gosh, he would kill her.
But I must say this: he saved the job of some 20 staff members on the Tonight Show by taking a 50% pay cut.
What?
You did not read this?
I did not read this.
Yeah, so they were slashing the budget of the Tonight Show by 20%.
Uh huh.
And so it was leading to massive layoffs in the staff. I mean, a 20-person layoff is a pretty big deal.
That's
on
a big deal.
Staff that size.
Yeah.
And so he's taken a 50% pay cut to keep their jobs. And you know what? I will say this. Good for him. I would say that, quite frankly, maybe America's economy would be in a slightly different place for many people if there were more executives, let's say, who followed this lead and said, you know what, I'm going to cut my salary so that everyone else can keep getting paid.
Well, you know, that's a good point. He is renowned, though, for having still not spent a single cent of the money he's made from The Tonight Show. He makes his money doing live appearances and lives off that. And so how much money does one guy need?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? I'm not saying that he's a saint who's going hungry so that the staff can eat.
Right.
I don't want to make it that. But he's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And that in this day and age is just so out of the ordinary.
Right.
But again, you know, how many executives need to make $75 million a year?
Right. Or $1 billion if you're the head of Kaiser Permanente, you know, like...
Which I am.
You're the head of Kaiser
Permanente. I am. I've been meaning to talk to you about that.
You're Kaiser
Permanente. The reason I'm always late to record, there's just so much to go on.
I see.
So much to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I would like to just say that because it may be the last time I ever say those words your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. Good for you, Jay Leno.
You heard it here.
Now, can you explain to me, Dean
Hagler?
Yes,
I can.
Because, again, it's been hard being me.
Yes,
and
your head through a window.
I can only take so much interest in what's going on in the world.
Scrambled as you are.
Who is Sam Basile?
Sam Basile doesn't exist. Sam Basile is some other producer whose real name has been outed and he's gone into hiding. Because he produced a film that has enraged the
planet.
Directed
a film.
No, no. It's directed by someone else. He's the producer.
No, he's the director. They've talked to the producer.
No, I read the interview by Tim Dixon's. Alan, okay. A porn producer, or I mean a porn director by the name of Alan is the director. Oh. So Sam is the producer. He was the guy on set calling lunch. He was that guy. And now...
So he made... It's an anti-Islamic film?
It's an anti-Islamic film that all of the actors were duped into. It was supposed to be called something Warrior.
It's not a union film. There are no SAG actors.
No, they painted a green screen on a brick wall and had people come. They didn't get their script. They were just told the lines by the director and Sam. They said, say this, say that. And there was no rehearsal. And this thing was awful. And it mocks the Islamic religion. And, of course, the 14-minute edited trailer of that went on YouTube. And that was seen by everybody around the world that has started the rioting and the burning down of everything.
And it American. Really is responsible for these riots?
Well...
A YouTube video? I mean...
I know. That seems highly improbable, doesn't it? Because... I got things up on YouTube I can't get five people to look at. And here this thing is horrible. It's horribly shot. It's ridiculous. And yet it somehow enraged everybody.
I mean, why aren't they attacking embassies every time there's an episode of Tosh 2.0?
You know, they probably will now.
I guess those are not seen as anti-Islamic.
No, they're right. Just anti-good.
Human, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's like anything. I think it's like the L.A. riots when the Lakers win. Those aren't Laker fans rioting. So I think a lot of people just jump on the bandwagon because there's rioting. I'm sure many of them haven't even seen it. They just heard, oh, my God, there's this super insulting film, and I'm enraged. Come and join me, and everybody
is. So Laker fans are attacking embassies around the world.
No. Laker fans burn down the city every time the Lakers win.
Oh, win, right. Yeah.
So that's their celebration.
So I don't understand. I mean, how is this playing out? What's the scuttlebutt, Dean Haglund? I mean, there must be conspiracy theories about this. There must be.
Well, that's the one that the embassy attack in Syria was carefully planned beforehand, and they were just... using the film as a conduit, as a trigger pin point to go in and do a planned attack that they had planned all along. That's the conspiracy theory, that it could have been any other anti-Islamic YouTube video out there, but they just picked this one as a thing because I'm not even sure when it was posted. I'm not sure when they shot it, but it seemed that it was already on YouTube for a little bit before this thing triggered.
I just have not been able to bring myself to turn on any of the news channels for fear that this thing is going to be all that anybody's talking about.
Well, it makes for a lot of news when everything's being burnt down U.S.-wise around the world. But it's kind of bizarre. It seems improbable.
Now, I saw a film last night.
Oh, yeah?
That has a film about a mystery.
And does it want to make it burn down an embassy? Is it that horrible?
No, but it is. But it's I'll just mention the name and you tell me whether you've heard of this.
Okay.
It's called Resurrect Dead, The Mystery of the Toynbee Tiles.
No.
Now, do you know of the Toynbee Tiles?
I have heard of them, but I don't
know.
These
are these tiles that started appearing in northeastern cities,
yes,
like Philadelphia in the early 80s.
Yeah.
They basically, you know, would say these cryptic phrases, Toynbee idea as seen in movie 2001, Resurrect Dead on Planet Jupiter. And referencing Arnold Toynbee's idea that science would someday be able to resurrect. Because, as we've talked about, you know, nothing dies, it transforms.
Right.
Energy waves continue, molecules continue.
Go on, dark energy, whatever.
That science will find a way to...
Reanimate. Or bring that energy back to a three-dimensional form.
And that will be perhaps the next step in human evolution.
Mm.
A la 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Right.
But so these started proliferating, and the documentary... Resurrect Dead, The Mystery of the Toynbee Tiles from director John Foy, focuses on primarily on an artist whose name I think is Justin Doerr, who reminds me so much of Chris Waterden. I can't begin
to say. Oh, is that right? Our old assistant.
And who really became fascinated with these and wanted to know, like, who's doing it? Why are they doing it? They're appearing everywhere. They're in all these different cities.
Yeah.
And then one started showing up in South America with an address next to them of a house in Philadelphia. And
what?
So the film is about how he became more and more interested in this and how he joined forces with some documentary filmmakers, and they decided to solve the mystery of these, of who was behind it. And it's fascinating. I mean, following their sleuthing is fascinating. And I've been sort of surprised that the reviews were sort of mixed, not very interesting. I mean, it's almost like, unless the mystery had a great reveal that satisfied everyone, then a bunch of critics are like, kind of, you know, ambivalent about the movie, ignoring the fact that it's a real story. And it's so fascinating how much the more you learn, the guy that first started seeing these tiles and became interested in investigating it is exactly like the guy he's pursuing.
Ah.
And so it reminded me of our film a bit, The Truth Is Out There, and this concept that, you know, we attract those things that will reveal ourselves to us.
I see.
And it's a really interesting, and I've heard about this film because we would show The Truth Is Out There places and people would start to come up and ask me, have you seen this movie?
Right.
And then I showed Karl Rove I Love You, and people said, have you seen this movie?
The same movie.
Because it deals with some similar terrain. And
wow.
But it also, at its heart, speaks to when you learn about the story of the guy who created these tiles, it really speaks to the heart of one of the things that I was getting after with Truth Is Out There, which is this idea that, you know, when we laugh at people because of their ideas, we encourage them to go into hiding.
Ah.
And instead of, and so that's what happened to this person who we're led
down
to believe that put these tiles down. He wanted to get this idea out, this Arnold Toynbee idea out, and he approached mainstream media and he was laughed at. And so he became very much this kind of paranoid shut-in, but who nevertheless would reach out and create these tiles, which speak to wonderful artistry and cleverness. He would drive around in a car that was missing the floorboard on one side. That's how he was able to drop these tiles, like at the entrance to the Holland Tunnel during the middle of the day. You know, they're in weird places. But he's so inventive, and he's an artist. He really perfected this tiling. And it just, you know, it makes you think, you know, boy, what might that guy be contributing if people hadn't just laughed him into isolation in the first place?
So in the movie, they never find this guy, or is that...
Well, they reveal who it is.
Yeah.
I won't give away...
Don't spoil it.
I won't spoil anymore.
Where
did
you see this thing? Is it in
Netflix? I watched it on Netflix.
On Netflix?
Streaming on Netflix.
Fantastic.
Last night. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that seems like my kind of movie.
I think so. That's why I was asking you about it. You know what is your type of movie,
yes,
Dean Haglund?
I do. What are we talking about, Rich?
A silent film with Charlie Chaplin called City Lights.
Fantastic. You finally watched it.
I watched that this week.
Yeah, what'd you think?
You know, very touching. Boy,
oh, boy.
The ending really just packs a wall up, doesn't it?
Though, still today, that's, you know.
And so many of the set pieces really do...
still hold up. It's funny.
Really hold up, or is just... They kill you. I mean, so many of the sequences where you think the tramp is about to turn a corner on this and make this work out, like the boxing thing,
kills me. It's so well choreographed.
And it is so funny, but then when it takes a turn for the worst, it just...
And everything's like that, right? They have these what are hilarious set pieces and yet are necessary to telling the story.
Yeah.
Which, you know, how many comedies do that these days? That,
right.
Well, we got this funny idea. It does nothing to tell the story. You could be without these goofy gags in these movies, but... All his gags.
And I like how it describes itself as a pantomime.
Yes.
Because it isn't a silent film. There is a soundtrack.
Right.
Chaplin did design things around some sound effects.
Yes.
For example.
Yeah, sound was already in place by the time, technically, the last silent movie ever to...
But again, I'm saying it's not a silent movie because it did rely on not only sound effects, but it did have an accompanying score as opposed to an accompanist playing it live.
Right. Because by that time, there were no musicians in the theaters.
Right. So it isn't silent, but it is a pantomime in that sense, much like The Artist last year.
Exactly.
So that was great fun. And I saw another film... by one of my all-time favorite directors, Akira Kurosawa.
Uh-huh.
Another one of what I would call his contemporary films.
I see.
You know, they weren't period pieces at the time.
Right.
And it's a crime film, a corporate crime film, ooh, called The Bad Sleep Well, with a fantastic performance from Toshirô Mifune. And it's about corporate corruption and about someone, the painstaking lengths they go to expose this political corruption and bring the executives to justice.
How timely.
And how they can't do it, ultimately, because you can't beat the corporation. And this was 1960. Yeah.
Wow.
It's not structurally the best of his films, mm-hmm, but as a director, boy, Kurosawa was really sort of without peer. I mean,
kinda.
Again, every scene, every sequence is just so riveting. And, you know, we were talking a little bit before the show about how we're conducting this Chilpack Hollywood Hour poll of the top films of all time.
Right.
Our answer, our counterpart to the released Sight and Sound poll that comes out every 10 years. We, instead of 150 critics around the world, we are canvassing all the guests.
All the guests of our shows.
Who have appeared on Chilpack Hollywood Hour, mm-hmm, asking them for their 10 top films of all time, as well as some other questions, like what's the first film they remember seeing?
What was your favorite part of being on our show?
No.
No?
What might be your least favorite film of all time, or the first film you ever walked out on?
What's your
favorite movie theater? And so we've heard back from about 9 or 10 of our guests thus far. We're about a fifth of the way through, mm-hmm, compiling all these lists.
Fantastic.
And we'll be revealing the consensus at the end of the year, but it's fun getting these. But one of the things that I've noticed since, obviously, everyone who comes onto our show is in some way related to the entertainment industry.
In some way.
It reminds me of the filmmaker list that Sight and Sound published when they canvassed filmmakers around the world.
Ah, right.
Whereas 4 of the top 11 films, according to critics on the Sight and Sound poll, were silent films, there were very few old films of any kind on the filmmaker list, and there were no silent films.
What?
And I've got to believe that people in the entertainment industry tend to cherish the films that influenced them.
And why they became...
But they don't necessarily then honor the films that influenced those films.
Right. Those that came before.
That lineage doesn't necessarily hold up. And it is, if so, one of the reasons, really, again, to recommend film critics as an important group in the cultural discussion.
Right.
Because they do keep track of that lineage.
And keep that history line alive.
Absolutely.
So that you know the shoulders you stand on, the giants.
In compiling my list, it really was painful for me that I don't have a silent film on there.
Ow.
I mean, I really ultimately, General came close, and I just, and I had to hold myself to the rule of no more than one film from any individual director so that I could have a wide sampling. And yet, there's no Kurosawa. Here's a filmmaker that I think may be the all-time greatest filmmaker, and I don't have a single film of his.
What?
And it reminds me a little bit maybe of Alfred Hitchcock when we were wondering why Vertigo is the number one. And this idea that, well, maybe because it's so obviously his most personal film, that's just the one where critics have decided, okay, well, we'll form consensus behind that.
Right.
Because for all these years, all these decades, the vote's been split between so many great Hitchcock films.
Yeah.
He didn't have a Citizen Kane.
One that stood out
or
above.
Or an 8.5 that stood out above. And to me, to a degree, Kurosawa is very much like Hitchcock in that.
Oh, right.
You know, you can't say Seven Samurai stands out over Throne of Blood or Rashomon or and I always loved his contemporary crime film High and Low.
Oh, yeah.
So there's just no way for me to pick one from that group.
It's true. And that makes sense. I mean, but I'm...
So I'm hoping that you'll come through...
I'm going to come through with a lot of silent films, my friend. Don't worry. Don't you kid yourself.
We're going to need that.
I grew up on those.
I did receive lists from two of our guests who collaborated on another film that I saw last night.
Nah.
I received lists from actress Tamina Sunny and filmmaker Stig Svensson.
Oh, right. Remember we had them?
Who collaborated on the film Elevator.
That's right.
Which they told us all about on a Chilpak Hollywood Hour.
Yes.
And I saw this film, and this is the thriller that's set almost entirely in an elevator. It's speaking of Hitchcock, it's like, what is it, Lifeboat?
Yes, Lifeboat, where he's stuck in...
It's Lifeboat, only in an elevator.
Right.
With gore.
Oh,
It gets a little grisly.
Does it?
Yeah.
Wow.
This is really quite an accomplished piece of filmmaking. This
is it really?
Yeah.
Because I remember we were talking, going, "Well, how many camera angles can you possibly get in an elevator?"
It moves. It's pretty darn good, and the performances really are good.
Wow. And where'd you see it?
Netflix.
Netflix. This is another Netflix wonder. So you just been sitting at home going through the old Netflix queue?
Well, I've been watching movies. I've got an all-time best to.
Oh yes, to put.
And I like watching the work that our guests do.
Yes.
So anyway, so I really look forward to whatever Stig has next. He wrote us. I'm going to run him back, find out what's going on because it's a really accomplished piece.
Awesome.
And he should feel very good about it.
Excellent.
So thank you to those who have already returned lists. David Soboloff has returned his list. Mark Altman.
Wow.
Steve Crozier. James Kerwin.
The
Phil
big names.
Larness.
Phil Larness. You know who's off that list? Dean Haglund.
Dean Haglund. Thus far, I'll just reveal this. Casablanca.
Yeah.
Blade Runner.
Yeah.
The Godfathers. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
What?
2001 all have multiple mentions.
Yes.
I do like how people do figure out how to cheat. How to get like 13 titles 13, onto a 10.
I'm torn between...
I don't want to mention names.
You're right.
Tamina, I'm talking to you. The Lord of the Rings is not one film, but it is on her list, The Lord of the Rings.
Well, see that...
So she gets the trilogy as one entry. Now you're saying maybe it should all count as one?
Because it's kind of one big long film.
Yeah.
But is there one that stands out?
But that means that she gets 13 on her list, you know?
Yeah,
it's
if you watch it back to back, that's a 6-hour... I mean, there's no directorial...
I think it's 9 hours, by the way, back to back to back.
Gee whiz. Yeah. Anyway, but there's no directorial or...
Vision.
Anyway. Oh, you bastard.
But Godfather and Godfather 2 are always paired together. Always put those on there.
Yeah, because they complement each other as, you know, you'd watch them back to back. Much like Jaws and Jaws 2.
Not Jaws 3D?
No, that one I leave off.
Oh, all right.
That didn't seem
Jaws like 4 with Michael Caine?
In the Bahamas. Then that picks it up again. It all makes sense why Michael Caine's in the Bahamas with a shark at a research facility, if I recall. I know my Jaws sequels. Don't kid yourself.
I would like to take a moment to go to a quick commercial break for a film that is, for the first time ever, available on Blu-ray.
What?
This week on Blu-ray.
Of course, one of the big stars on The X-Files, and he's making a documentary called The Truth Is Out There.
One of the things that UFO research has done to me is instill in me a healthy disrespect for the things that government says.
They are poisoning our people. There is a population control agenda. There really are people who want to kill off the majority of the people in the world.
If we don't allow these corrupt banks to fail, then the nation will fail, and there will be no recovery. Don't stand on the sides of the river and comment on how corrupt and dark and evil everything is. We all know that.
I don't need to have you understand or agree with me or believe. It doesn't matter to me. I know what I know.
The name of our film is...
The truth is out there.
But it really isn't.
But isn't there a universal truth that science is going for?
Perhaps the universal truth is what makes us subjective.
Okay, you just blew my mind.
The truth is out there, Dean Haglund.
Finally,
the truth is out on Blu-ray.
How did that finally happen?
Of course, people can find The Truth Is Out There at truth-is-out-there.com.
Rolls off your tongue.
Truth is out there with dashes in between. And it is so timely to be talking about it because we are going to bring back right now...
The Chill Pack Hollywood Wingnut of the Week.
But with more than one wing nut. It's your wing nuts of the week.
Oh, fantastic.
Plural. And this week's wing nuts are Stanley Monteith, Alex Jones, and yours truly, Phil Lernis.
What? What
all
do those
of
three?
Whom,
I don't see the common denominator there.
All of whom
have their own radio show
and have been talking about the dangers of putting fluoride in drinking water.
Right.
For years. Do you know that when I was in high school?
Yes.
1986.
I remember.
My debate case that took me all the way to the national championships was to remove fluoride from drinking water.
Wow.
And back then people were saying, oh, but you know, what's the harms
right.
in it? What are the harms in it? And, you know, and I would actually take the time in debate rounds to
lay out
to argue something I actually believed in.
Yeah, that's good.
Which was removing fluoride from our drinking water.
Right. Now this has been a common conspiracy thing that fluoride.
And again, something that I received so much anger towards me about as recently as the screening at Goldsmiths College in the UK, where people were talking about the danger of letting people like Stanley Monteith and Alex Jones speak about. Express this anti-vaccination mentality.
Right.
Right? You know, that, don't you realize that if you scare people off from vaccines, people are going to die.
These diseases will pop up again.
And they do have evidence. They have done research. They do have, this should be talked about.
Right.
Have you looked at what is put into vaccines? And vaccine is not the same thing as the fluoridation of water, but I do want to say that these people who are saying this about vaccines are the same people who have been saying this about the dangers of fluoride in water.
Right.
And they're certainly being proven to be now embraced by the quote-unquote mainstream media.
Really?
Of being right.
Okay.
Fluoride and low IQ link is real, says the new Harvard report. Harvard is not exactly
the conspiracy
world.
No, the conspiracy rags that I'd normally pick up. The Harvard world.
According to a meta-analysis funded by the National Institute of Health.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and it's them, right? It's the them is the National Institute of Health.
Right.
I mean, according to Dr. Stan and to Alex, the fix is probably in with the National Institute of Health.
Right.
And if they're... A meta-analysis shows that children who live in areas with heavily fluoridated water supplies have significantly lower IQs than those who live in areas where the water has low levels of the chemical, then there's something to that, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
And some of us have only been saying this for 26 years now. Fluoride was originally added to the drinking water supplies as proposed solution to tooth decay problems.
Right.
But as time has gone on, more and more people have begun to question the safety and efficacy of the practice. On the safety front, dozens of towns have begun removing fluoride from their city's water supplies, in many cases due to public pressure, while studies continue to come out exposing various health issues.
Yeah, and fluoride doesn't actually help tooth decay either. Did that even decrease?
According to Mercola.com, there have been over 23 human studies and 100 animal studies linking fluoride to brain damage.
Right.
High occurrences of dental fluorosis, which leads to heavy tooth enamel damage, have consistently reported as well. So you ask me, has it even been proven to help your teeth? It actually, in high doses, and these high doses can be found in an alarming number of places, it's been proven to do damage
right
to teeth.
So in Los Angeles water supply, what's our fluoridation?
I haven't looked locally because I've been too busy acting globally, my friend.
Well, we get the annual water report, and I normally keep it on a shelf somewhere. I'm going to look that up.
But isn't this the most terrifying thing? The 22 years these studies have been assembled mm-hmm. and looked at, and 27 different studies show an inverse association between high fluoride exposure and low intelligence in children.
And you know what? This goes back to that idea in the 50s and the 60s that it was, you know, better living through chemicals. The Dow and DuPont, and they're going to save us with all the miracles that chemical manufacturing can possibly do. And so we threw every chemical we had in drinking supply, not thinking long-term effects. And so I'm glad this is coming out now because
70% of the drinking water supplies in this country are still having fluoride added to it.
Right.
Even though two of the types of fluoride used in water supplies are actually classified as harmful waste byproducts from the fertilizer industry.
Jeez. Wow. I didn't realize that.
So anyway, a tip of the cap to Dr. Stan, yep. to Alex Jones, and to yours truly.
Mr. Phil Ernest.
Your wing nuts. Of the week.
I call you Wingnut every week. In a nice way.
I think it's time to go from celebrating the Wingnuts who sometimes prove themselves to be right.
Not gloating, by the way.
To remembering some people who have left us in the last week. Here they are, your celebrity deaths.
Celebrity deaths.
And I like, Dean Haglund, that we've been expanding the definition of celebrities. Last week, we talked about Fujifilm.
Fujifilm as one of the celebrities who died.
But it certainly was a death of a type. It was an ending.
Yeah,
and,
big time.
And a transition that has the repercussions of which are rocking a lot of us. Who certainly anticipated still using Fujifilm.
Right.
This week, we do have human beings.
Wow.
That we're mentioning. To call them celebrities might be a little bit of a stretch. They're not household names, but they are celebrities within their fields, and I certainly think their contributions warrant them being remembered on your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Let's do it.
First up, Jeffrey Ammer, longtime Hollywood marketing executive. Now, we trash marketing departments
all the time.
Almost as often as we trash Jay Leno.
That's true. Because often the marketing is wrong. The marketing somehow leads the viewer astray from what the movie really is.
There's that. There's also my old thing that just because you can sell a movie or think you can sell it isn't a reason to make it.
Right. That's a good point, too.
If it's not being driven by the stories you want to tell, and then how do we market it, you've already put the cart before the horse.
Right. And market-driven product is not the way to do
and
movies.
And you're seeing the effect of that in the long-term box office over the last year.
Absolutely.
But Jeffrey Ammer was one of those longtime Hollywood marketing executives. He died of a heart attack at age 62. He worked at every studio at one point or another. He began his career at Fox, where he worked for 9 years, then moved to Synergy, then Disney, Revolution, and Sony before founding his own consulting firm, G2. Wow. He was named Advertising Age's Entertainment Marketer of the Year in 2003. And he worked on campaigns for Disney films such as The Insider, the Toy Story films, Remember the Titans, which really was a huge success largely because of the marketing.
That's right. Great trailers.
And as well as Sony films like the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie. After G2, he ran the marketing operations in the early days of Marvel Studios and built the campaigns for Iron Man.
Wow.
And the Incredible Hulk. So he really did help establish Marvel as a film brand.
Right.
So there certainly is no denying that this man's impact was really felt, not only in terms of what movies we saw then, but in terms of what movies are getting made now.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about Marvel stepping in as its own studio and how everybody mocked that, going, you know, what do these nerdy comic book eggheads know about filmmaking? And that it was the marketing a lot that really pushed that Marvel studio forward, because it was basically a brand new studio that leapt off from whatever deals they were doing. Like DC. DC was doing their own deals, and then Marvel said, well, screw that. We'll just become our own studio, take our own licenses, and just run them forward. And
I got to tell you, the marketing in of those films, especially Iron Man, which was like the first big one out of the gate, was critical. And Spider-Man, which he did for Sony. Oh, by the way, that was a Marvel. You know, these were critical, not just because of the money they had riding on it and these movies need to be successful. But if you'll remember, Marvel put together a financing package to be able to make these movies. And as one Wall Street insider who had direct knowledge of those negotiations told me, don't look too closely at that deal. Don't look at the interest, the way the interest is structured in that deal. There is no way that, no matter how successful those films are, there is no way that Marvel can ever even pay off the interest from this production financing. But that was never the idea. The idea was just get us the financing. We will turn out hits that are such big hits that people will want to infuse us with cash, will want to buy us out, will want to do it.
Create your own gravity.
One of those cases where the bottom line will not be the bottom line. We will give such an impression of success that it will lead to a sweetheart deal that will get us out from under our financial failure.
Right.
And so that's some pressure for a marketing campaign.
Sheesh.
And pulled it off.
And pulled it off.
Now, in a show where we have been talking about suddenly the death of film.
Yes.
As not the death of movies, but the death of film.
The actual film stock.
We talk about the soullessness of Disney.
We do. Always.
Here, these things come together as we remember Bob Lambert, digital media executive, who died at age 55 this week.
So young.
Cause of death has not been given, announced. For 25 years, he was at the Walt Disney Company.
Wow.
And Mr. Lambert was a major force in pushing the film business to embrace a digital future. Really on two major playing fields. He played a key role in overhauling Disney's approach to creating its animated hits and altering the way those movies would be projected on the big screen.
Oh, cool.
As founder and chairman of DCI.
Right. The digital.
The six studio consortium that helped push movie theaters to abandon film projectors in favor of digital exhibition. He helped create a set also of uniform standards for digital projection.
Wow.
And while working for Disney Feature Animation, he helped develop the way to replace cel animation with CGI.
Ah, look at that.
And he was the one who later tapped Pixar to design the software and help create the digital production system.
Right. And then Pixar became so huge that they are now basically the Disney machine.
So again, here's a man, not a celebrity, Bob Lambert, but we remember him because
so influential.
No matter how you feel about hand-drawn animation versus CGI, how you feel about film projection versus digital projection, you cannot doubt that. I mean, this man completely changed the way that movies are made and the way movies are viewed, and that ripples into the ways they're distributed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're only starting to see some of those ripples.
How to figure that out.
Yeah. This man's legacy will continue really to be written for many years to come.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. That is really an impressive credential.
Yeah.
Bob Lambert.
There you go. There are your celebrity deaths.
Celebrity deaths.
Wow. Look at what we we've already gotten through on
this is incredible
installment of Your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
I can't believe it.
What are you reading, Dean Haglund?
I am just picking up the next Swedish crime thriller novel called The Snowman by Bo.
Last week you didn't bother. I mean, one of these weeks, you know,
I'm going to remember.
If only we did this show in your office where you had your books. Oh wait.
Anyway, I just picked it up and just started. So I did that. I told you about Sam Stone's book, which may be soon a graphic novel drawn by somebody after...
What?
I'm saying maybe. I don't know. I don't
Who
know.
Might
maybe.
That be?
Maybe. Just saying. Maybe.
Interesting.
Yes. So that's also something. And what else? There's a couple other books I have by the bookshelf, but I'm going to go with that crime novel. What are you reading?
I'm still working on Jonathan Lippman and Mark Hirschhorn's I Hate People.
Yes.
Head cold, not the best time to be reading a book called I Hate People. And still reading Anthony Lane. I'll be reading Anthony Lane's book. It's a very thick tome for quite some time, but I'm sure back east I will start work on something else. Now, I'm glad that we have a little time at the bottom. Usually we're so pressed for time.
Yes.
But you... Were you training this week or were you in a marathon?
No. This was an accident, an accidental marathon that I fell
into.
Now,
was it the triathlon or the marathon?
It was the triathlon.
It was Carmageddon again this week, by the way.
Was it?
It was Carmageddon too, yeah. 405 was shut down this weekend.
I thought that was the 29th that's going to be shut down. Are you sure?
It was this weekend.
No.
And, of course, it was shut down Friday because of the
fire. Yeah.
So it was a terrible weekend. Yeah.
So October 7th is the Long Beach Marathon, my very first marathon. So what they suggest you do is a month before the marathon or 3 weeks before, you run that marathon path so that psychologically when you're at the wall at mile 20, you recognize the route and you go, oh, this is that last 6 miles, and you can just sort of dance through that as you go to the finish line of the marathon. So we basically ran 10 miles, the beginning of the marathon and the end of the marathon. And what we didn't realize was there is a giant Long Beach triathlon going on. So the route that we had planned, we sort of came on one side of the dock, and even there were these two guys going, taking a shortcut, eh? And we're like, haha, whatever you're talking about. And then we come around the corner, and there is thousands of people with their numbers on, and we just sort of accidentally run in, and then we're on the same path as them. So then we think, oh, well, that'd be fun. We just stay, and we're keeping great pace because they have now already swum 2 miles, biked, I think, 20 to 30 miles, and this was the last leg of the triathlon. So they were about the same pace because we were doing an easy run.
Now, I know a woman who was participating in this triathlon.
Is that right?
So I think wouldn't the swim would have been up north?
Yeah, Belmont Shores.
Okay.
South. Belmont Shores is where the swim was by the pier, I think.
And then?
They bike up and down Shoreline Drive and Ocean.
See, that doesn't make sense to me. I think the Los Angeles Triathlon was this weekend, and I think it was out in the Palisades then. But
there's one there too.
It doesn't make sense that you would go up and back. It makes sense that you would swim and then you would bicycle to the run.
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly what they did. They biked past the run and then turned around and sort of came back to make it all 30 miles.
And so people thought you were now participating in this.
Yes.
And you could have won the triathlon.
I could have really.
Because you were far more fresh than that.
I was cleaning up. I was passing people. And then it came down to the wire. And there was the announcer. And he somehow had a computer program that announced the name of everybody running past. Here comes Dr. Terry Henderson. What a great. He's looking great. And then as each person passed the line. So then I thought, I don't have a shoe tag. I'm not supposed to be in this race. He's going to go, who's that guy?
Yeah. They're going to think you're trying to cheat.
Trying to cheat. So we.
What was the? Was it a Boston Marathon one year where the winner had just
took the subway?
Hopped off a subway.
Yeah, yeah. And then the mayor ran the Mexico City subway. The mayor of subway. He ran the. He started to run the Mexico City Marathon. The actual mayor, and then he ran to his limo and then drove to a mile to the finish line, got out and cleaned up basically. But yeah, we ducked out left just before the finish and then continued our run up the beach and sort of avoided any embarrassment that we may have caused at the Long Beach Triathlon.
So October 7th, the first marathon for Dean Haglund.
Very first. And
Patty's going to run as well.
Patty's, we're both going to run side by side.
So funny. I feel like maybe I should enlist, since Ethan Dettenmeyer has a portable podcast recorder, I feel like maybe he should be at a checkpoint, I should be at a checkpoint, and we should be recording.
Oh, that'd be fun. That would be hilarious, seeing how I do, because there's check, you know, it goes around the pyramid at the Long Beach UC campus,
uh-huh.
and then comes back down the beach and Belmont Shores. So you would know how I was doing at every 5 mile checkpoint.
Now he's really involved in doing these remote podcasts for Combat Radio.
Yeah.
From haunted locations.
Oh yes.
So are there any parts of the Long Beach Marathon route that might be haunted?
Not at this point. There might be a few bodies at the end of it, but I can't think of any haunted location in Long Beach other than the Queen Mary, of course, which we run by. So technically, you could go into the Queen Mary and come out and see us all run through the parking lot on our way. That would be mile 5 at that point. So that'd be fairly early on, if you want to do that.
We'll wrap this show up. And why don't I, just since I mentioned, you know, Tamina and Stig's film Elevator,
yes.
and that I got their lists from them.
Yes.
Why don't I just share a couple things about them? One of the questions that we ask again is, what's the first film you remember seeing?
Yeah.
And Stig Svensson wrote E.T.
What?
This is the first striking movie experience I had, and at that moment I knew I had to make movies. I was 7 at the time, but it was just such an amazing experience for a child. E.T. is still one of my all-time favorite movies. And when I asked what is his least favorite movie or maybe the first film he walked out of,
oh, yeah.
this is a hard question. I don't think I ever walked out of a movie. I think it's always worth to sit through till the end. There might be something great in there.
Mm-hmm.
I generally will stay because I'll start to ask, like,
why did this go wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, coming from Norway, there are so many horrible films to choose from. But in a way, I feel that wouldn't be fair. So I'm picking an American film, Battlefield Earth.
Ah! The John Travolta sci-fi.
Based on L. Ron Hubbard.
Yes. Is it sci-fi? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah,
they
sure.
had hoses up their nose and stuff like that. That was... Well, that was part of the costume design.
Oh, I thought you were talking about why I had a sore throat again.
Wow.
And for Tamina,
yeah,
I asked her, what was the first film you remember seeing? And her first film was E.T.
What?
And here she is acting in a movie with a filmmaker who was inspired to make movies because that was his first
and
film.
And do they know they have the same answer?
I don't know. They do now.
That's hilarious.
And her least favorite film and or the first film she walked out of, the film that springs to mind is a recent movie, the remake of Total Recall.
Ah.
I loved the first one, but the remake was terrible. I literally fell asleep in the movie theater, and I had never fallen asleep in a movie theater before.
Wow, that is damning comment. Have you seen Total Recall, the remake?
I have not.
No,
I was sick the day that it was in theaters. You know,
Zinger.
Dean Haglund.
Yes, sir.
You and I care about the environmental footprint we leave, do we not?
I surely have no car.
It's one of the reasons we don't really drive.
Yes, we're all public transit here in Los Angeles,
If we did drive.
Yes.
And we did drive in the Northeast U.S.
If that happened.
We'd probably be filling our tanks with Empire State Gas.
You think so?
The only independently owned stations in the Northeast. You know, Dean, their gas is organically grown and delivered straight from farm to pump. Empire State Gas, we've got great gas. You can find so many installments of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Yes, you can.
At chillpackhollywood.com, C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K, hollywood.com.
Yep.
You can download them, stream them, subscribe via iTunes.
You can even write a review.
And you can subscribe via really simple syndication.
It's so simple. It's really simple.
We hope you will like the show on Facebook.
Yes, please like us.
Facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood.
Mm-hmm.
On MySpace, every weekend, we publish a blog previewing the coming week's show.
It's no longer owned by Rupert Murdoch, so I feel good about it again.
Okay. And for a while, it seemed like we would be the ones turning off the lights and going home.
Right. Now it's just a fun little site for some of us.
MySpace.com/ChillPackHollywood. You can follow Dean Haglund on Twitter.
I'm at D Haglund.
I'm at Phil Lernis. And please write us.
Please.
ChillPackHollywood at yahoo.com, C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K, Hollywood, at yahoo.com.
We answer all our emails.
Well, we didn't answer all of LeJean's, the Venerable Pooh's emails.
Because there were a lot.
This week, they came in late last night.
Late,
I'm sure he understands that. However, one of his questions was, how can he get The Truth Is Out There on Blu-ray?
Oh, my gosh.
And we answered that question earlier in the show.
And we'll answer it. We'll tell you again. Go to the website.
Truth-is-out-there.com. Dean Haglund, I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Maybe.
I mean, we'll have a show next week.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The magic of podcasting.
Fantastic. Till then, I'm Dean Haglund.
Phil Larinus.
Bye now. In a historic building in downtown Los Angeles, it's your chillback Hollywood hour. It's your chillback Hollywood hour. It's your chillback Hollywood hour. In a historic building in downtown Los Angeles. In a historic building in downtown Los Angeles.
Belated spoiler alert.